Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hosts. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethost.com/terms.
If you're a podcast host, listen up. This one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
Tommy, I am so proud of you and the rest of the team because you guys have been doing some hardcore off-roading recently. No more just pussyfooting around. You have been dragging and scraping your way up all these very hard off-road trails. And the reason we're talking about that, of course, is because we just did a video where we compared three of the best-selling off-roaders that compare directly to each other. So what were the three that you guys took up? Actually, we took up. I was there too. The Ironclads.
Yeah, so we compared the new Forerunner Trail Hunter to the Ford Bronco with a Sasquatch package to a new Wrangler 4xe with the locking diffs. That's a Rubicon trim. And not only did we do that, but then Case and I yesterday also did an even harder trail with just the Wrangler and the Bronco. And then before that, I did an even harder trail with just the 4Runner. The reason the timing doesn't always line up is because the cars come at different times. But basically, I feel like we have now a very good picture of how the three compare from an off-road standpoint.
Yeah, I know we've been doing some serious off-roading because we just spent the morning apologizing to Toyota.
Yeah.
Because we did some damage to the 4Runner because, well, we were doing some hard off-roading.
Yeah, for sure. Those wheels took a beating, which I feel just terrible about.
And to be fair, the Trail Hunter wheels, they're beautiful. They're bronze, and we had this kind of green-colored one. But they do kind of stick out a little bit beyond the tire rubber, and that is a recipe for damaging wheels when you're doing some serious off-roading.
Yeah, and it's an 18-inch wheel versus a 17 like on the other two. So it's also got the smallest tire. So we were doing a level of trail that I was very impressed that the 4Runner was able to complete by itself. Because if you look at the Onyx off-road rating, it said, do not attempt this in a stock four-wheel drive. You need 35 or 37s. You need locking diffs. And we did it with 33s. And I think that the trail I was doing got a lot harder since last time I did it, which is what ended up damaging those wheels, which I feel terrible about. Because last time I did it, it was very doable. We did it in a Trail Hunter, Tacoma, with little damage. But it got really chewed up over the winter. So it was a seriously gnarly trail that we took that 4Runner up, and it made it.
So, Cole, this is a video that we did in Moab. It's the same basic car, but this was a trip we took with Toyota, and we went into Hell's Revenge, but they were very conservative. So if you could find the video that Tommy did with it going up.
Yeah, it's on TFL Off-Road. It's the last video.
Yeah, that would kind of give you a better idea of the kind of hard trail that we did, or you did, Tommy.
I'm sorry, it's two videos ago. It's the one. There you go.
So let's talk about the newest contender in the off-road world, which is the Trail Hunter 4Runner. What did you think of it off-road? And tell me what its weaknesses and strengths were.
Well, as a whole, I was actually very impressed with it.
Wow, you're doing some... that's getting the thing pretty sideways.
You know, it did some off-road challenges that I never expected a stock Forerunner to be able to do. And look, the Forerunner has never been a direct Wrangler competitor.
It's not a convertible.
It's not a convertible, but it's also not really a full-on rock crawler like the Jeep is. So it's got independent front suspension. You can't get a front locker. Its body design is meant more for interior cargo volume and space than for kind of nimbleness between boulders.
I think you're absolutely right. I mean, the thing that I think has made it a competitor is not the company, but the people who buy them. So the people who buy them, the customers who buy these things, have decided that they're going to lift them, they're going to protect them, and they're going to take them off-road, and they're going to go head-to-head and toe-to-toe with Broncos and Wranglers. And I think this version of it, which is a Trail Hunter, is one of the most off-road-worthy ones. It's got Old Man Emu shocks, right? Mm-hmm. It's certainly competitively priced when it comes to how much it costs. You're looking at, I think this one was, how much? 69,000. We'll get to the Wrangler that we had, which was $80,000, but it's certainly competitively priced with the Wrangler and the Bronco. So keep going. You were saying.
Well, I mean, I think to your credit, what Toyota realized with this latest generation, the sixth generation of Forerunner, is that they were leaving a lot of money on the table with people doing what they did from the factory in the aftermarket.
Look at Mary go there. Holy cow.
So we're talking things like sliders, right? We're talking things like rear diff skid plates. Right, we're talking things like full-size spares. These are things that folks have been doing in the aftermarket of Forerunners for years and years and years. And Toyota's like, why don't we just do that from the factory and then allow people to finance that in and take that money?
Yeah, let's not leave that money on the table so that the off-road shops can do it versus the factory.
So I think that my big takeaway is
That's a tough turn you're doing. Right now, if you're not – by the way, if you guys want to see this video, head on over to TFL Talk on YouTube because we are showing it as we're talking about it. But that turn right there, I took that last year and I almost rolled a vehicle. That is a very tight turn.
I think that the Forerunner has really become an amazing off-road machine. And I think the previous generation as well, but more so in this new generation with the added sway bar disconnect, which we saw in action off-road, with the latest generation of A-Track and crawl control, which has gotten even better. The four-wheel drive system on the Forerunner is probably one of the best on the planet. The way that...
No more marching band drum sound, huh?
No, I mean, it's so smooth. The crawl control is the best it's ever been. The ability of that front axle to distribute torque is the best it's ever been. It is an amazing four-wheel drive system. The only things that are really letting this vehicle down, other than some small things...
That would be a good thumbnail, by the way.
It was a thumbnail. Other than some small things that we'll talk about in a minute, are things like clearances, right? So I think it's got right around 10.1 inches of ground clearance, and there were a lot of areas where we were getting hung up on that rear diff, right? Which is why they protected it on the Trail Hunter. There were areas where we were getting hung up on that front skid plate, which is why it's protected on the Trail Hunter. So it has the protection, and we put it through its limit, and we put the full weight of the vehicle on the fuel tank skid, it held up, right? We put the full weight of the vehicle on the slider at one point, it held up. So it's a very well-armored vehicle. It just needs some more clearance.
Well, the other thing it needs is like modular bumpers, right? Because I'm looking at the body-colored bumper right there from the side. Same thing in the front. This is stuff that in a Bronco or a Wrangler, you could swap out very easily and make it much more armored versus plasticky and very delicate for serious off-roading. So I think that part Toyota has still not gotten to. Like our friend James has a previous generation 4Runner, and you know he wanted to put an aftermarket bumper on it, and cutting that front end is hard because of all the intersecting and dissecting lines.
Yeah.
And I think that's the part that Toyota is missing as a factory if you're going to go, you know, directly up against the Bronco and the Wrangler.
Yeah, I think that's a really great point, right? There's some software stuff too, which they need to work out. For example, it should be that if you're going into multi-terrain select, if you're going into crawl control, it should just disable the parking sensors immediately, right? And then to disable the parking sensors, you can't just push a physical button. You have to dive into the menu, go into the right screen, go into the settings, and then turn it off, which is annoying. Other things, like it's got these really great trail cams, which work awesome, right? You can see your line placement, you can see at the front, you can see the underside with that underside camera thing, what they do, that they stitch the cameras together. That's all awesome. The problem is when you go into reverse, right, it clicks on your backup camera because you're often reversing, like on this obstacle here, I'm stuck on this rock to get a better line. Go back into drive, and then the camera doesn't come back. then you got to push the camera button again, which is a small annoyance, but it's like a little thing. Like, I just wish Toyota had a button that said, I'm off-road, bring me back to this page every time, turn off the parking sensors, I don't want any of it.
And look, the problem that I think a lot of people listening to this are feeling is that a lot of them are going to say to themselves, I'm never going to take this thing and do what you're doing here, right? For me, this is a family hauler, more so than even a Wrangler, because a Wrangler and a Bronco are very much specifically on the off-road scale versus the on-road scale. Mm-hmm. Whereas this Toyota, even the Trail Hunter, lives somewhere in the middle. And so Toyota is, I think, always very reticent to compromise the on-road comfort, on-road ability for off-roading. And in fact, when you're trying to design a vehicle that does both, you have to choose. It's like in motorcycles, right? It's either a dirt bike or it's a road bike. The dual sports are inevitably a compromise. And Toyota always, I think, chooses, even on the Trail Hunter, to compromise on the side of the road, which is where 90% of the people are going to drive it 90% of the time.
Yeah, but this is by far the best, most capable 4Runner they've ever done out of the box.
Yes.
Right. And I think that, like you said, we did find the limit on this trail.
Yes, you're stacking a lot of rocks.
Yes, there was some rock stacking going on just because we couldn't clear the control arms, and there's no other easier way around this. So we definitely found where that limit is. But like you said, it's very, very high, right? This vehicle is far more capable than anybody would probably realistically need, and it's a good machine. I was kind of hesitant on the new sixth generation because they went away from the V6, right? They went to some more digital bits and bobs in the previous gen, which I usually don't like. But from a hardware off-road standpoint, it is the best the 4Runner's ever been.
Yeah, and so let's talk about the Trail Hunter. What do you get when you get your Trail Hunter? You obviously get that roof rack that we're looking at. You also get an internal compressor, which is nice, so you can air down and air up. You get underbody cladding, like you would in a TRD Pro. You get kind of a unique interior with different accent colors. There you can see the skid plate. You can see the recovery points. You can see the little light bar in the front. The one thing you don't get, I love the fact that you get rock rails. One thing you don't get are 35s.
No.
And let's face it, 35s have become the new 33s. For better or worse.
Well, you don't even really get a true 33.
Oh, and you get the old man Emu, sorry.
Yeah, and you get the snorkel and the slider and the Trail Hunter branded skid plate too, which looks very cool if you're, I don't know, stuck underneath one.
So these are, the look of it is a serious off-roader, right? The second you stick desert air intake, as Toyota used to say, snorkel, as we say, onto a vehicle, that screams off-roader. And it screams, hardcore off-roader.
Yeah, for sure. And look, I mean, I think that ultimately the tire size is just a limiting factor. It's realistically closer to like a 32, I think, if you do the actual measurement.
It's even worse.
It needs to be this vehicle with a true 33 would be, I think, the perfect compromise. And I think a more aggressive than the Toyos that come on this 4Runner would be even better. But yeah, they did a great job. The question is, and this is the question that always comes back with the Trail Hunter, is it realistically worth $70,000?
You know, it's worth what people are willing to pay for it. And so I don't want to spill the beans, but we just sold our 4Runner after owning it for about 5 months. And the reason for that is, once again, people think that we're like regular owners, which I appreciate. That's the vibe we're going for, but we're not. I mean, for us, we buy these things and we test them. And then when we're kind of done testing them, we move them on. And sometimes that could be a year and sometimes that could be 5 months. With the 4Runner, I kind of felt like we had done everything that there is to do with it. And the great news, Tommy, is we bought it for 58 and we sold it for 57. And I think that, at the end of the day, is why people buy 4Runners.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week.
Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
We all know that owning a small business means you wear many hats, but sometimes you really need an extra pair of hands. Upwork is how good companies find great and trusted freelance talent. With more than 2 decades of experience with a simple and ambitious goal of pioneering a better way of working, Companies at every stage turn to Upwork to get things done and find more flexibility in staffing key projects and initiatives. They access a global marketplace filled with top talent in IT, web dev, marketing, and more. Posting a job on Upwork is easy. With no cost to join, you can register, browse freelance profiles, get help drafting a job post, or even book a consultation. From there, you connect with freelancers that get you and can easily hire them to take your business to the next level. Visit Upwork.com today and post your job for free. That's Upwork.com to post your job for free and connect with top talent ready to help your business grow. That's UPWORK.com. Upwork.com.
Yeah, that we got a great deal on the return, and I think you're right. You know, and there was some concern with this new generation going away from the V6. Is it going to hold its value? And at least initially in those first 5 months, the fact that we only lost $1,000 and 4,000 miles of ownership, it's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it's not only pretty awesome, it's incredible because we usually buy high and sell low, you know. And so I was super impressed by the fact that we were, you know, at a regular dealership here in Boulder, we were given, you know, basically what we paid for it after having it for a half a year and putting 3,000 miles on it. That may have to do with scarcity. You know, there aren't that many of the, they didn't have any at the dealership, any Forerunners yet. And so that may be the fact that, you know, we've sold it kind of while the truck is still hot. The other thing that I want to say about the vehicle is, like I said, we just took it up against the Wrangler and the Bronco, which we just bought as well. The Bronco, not the Wrangler. We've owned Wranglers. And the one thing that impressed me the most about the 4Runner was it just felt the most solid out of all of them. It just felt like this was really well built, like it was built out of, chiseled out of one piece of concrete. Everything was, you know, really well put together.
Yeah. No, I think that the build quality, even though no one will admit it online, at least initial quality from owning ours, right, which is not nearly long enough to test the long-term reliability.
People say, hey, why don't you keep them for like, you know, 200,000 miles? And the problem is, for us, if they're not earning money, these mm-hmm. vehicles, they're a business expense. There's a lot of money tied up in them. So if it's not making money for us, we got to kind of move it on. So let's not pretend like we're regular owners, because in that regard, we're not. Before we get on to the next two vehicles, we just showed a quick clip of it compared to the Land Cruiser. If you had the choice, and we've driven both, I think even in this video, would you get the 4Runner or the Land Cruiser? And why would you get the one you choose?
Well, my biggest problem with the 4Runner still,
yep,
which they just are so reluctant to address, is the lack of availability of the four-wheel drive auto setting.
Yeah, all Land Cruisers are all-wheel drive all the time.
So Toyota does have a Torsen center differential setup that you can get in not only the Land Cruiser, but it comes standard in the Land Cruiser, but it's available in the 4Runner and the Limited and in like the Platinum trims, I believe. That full-time system is a better thing to live with on a daily basis, right? So if you are living in an area like Colorado where you've got a lot of snow and you're going between snow and slush and dry and wet and slush and dry and snow, it is nice just being able to stick the four-wheel drive system in auto and never forgetting it or never touching it, which is what the Land Cruiser allows you to do. So I think that is one of the main reasons I would get the Land Cruiser, because you can't get that auto setting on the Pro or on the Trail Hunter, which would be just such an awesome thing that Toyota should integrate, in my opinion.
Yeah, so now price-wise, I mean, we're doing some hardcore off-roading there. I don't like the steps. Once again, we're stuck with these, you know, this...
That's our car.
Yeah, that's our car, but we're stuck with this problem having not really protection but steps, and if you're living with the thing on a daily basis and not, you know, off-roading it, the steps are a much better solution. It's when you take them off-road that they become a huge hindrance.
This was another thing which I really wanted to take our 4Runner, our TD off-road, which I still wager is the best value.
Yeah,
right.
Ours was, like I said, 58,000.
Ours was not. I would, the base TD off-road with the small screen, not right, the premium, is the okay, best value in the 4Runner lineup. What I really wanted to do was take that vehicle and put some sliders on it, right, and then kind of go see what that can do. And we're working with Toyota a little bit and like talking up to them about like, can we get some sliders on it, because Toyota has those Trail Hunter ones. It'd be cool to put them on the off-road. And our rep said that if you get the off-road that comes included with the plastic side steps like ours has, the mounting points aren't pre-installed for the sliders, right? Which is just silly. Like if I got a base Wrangler, which we did, right?
Yeah.
The holes come pre-drilled and threaded for the sliders. right? So what we did is we went out, we found some Rubicon takeoff sliders for $240, slapped them on, took them 6 minutes to drill them on.
The module,
yeah,
you know, that doesn't have it.
And then the 4Runner, right? Like, why doesn't every 4Runner come pre-drilled, ready to go for sliders? Right, that's just like such a, that would be such an awesome thing, which Toyota's missing out on.
Actually, our Silverado HD didn't come with steps, and it's such a tall truck. We actually got them from Chevy, and then they were once again pre-drilled, ready to go. It was 6 bolts. It took me and James like 20 minutes.
Yeah, and like the captured nut was in there. It was pre-threaded, just really ready to go. Yeah.
Yeah, really well thought out. So here's the thing. The 4Runner kind of price-wise ends, unless you're getting the TRD Pro or the Trail Runner, where the Land Cruiser starts. Mm-hmm. So Land Cruiser started about 55, and then if you go up to the fancy ones,
sure,
you're like at 75. I think the Land Cruiser has a better ride. I think the 4Runner is a little bit more sporty in a lot of ways. But to me, the real Land Cruiser, and I don't want to go into this, we talked about last week, is the LX700 Lexus. So that to me is a Land Cruiser. So I kind of would go with the 4Runner instead of the Land Cruiser, just because to me it feels younger, more sporty, and a little bit more value for your money.
Well, I think that's a good point. I would also extend that to saying I would go for a 4Runner, I think, if we're talking about the 4Runner without the hybrid. Because in my opinion, the hybrid just doesn't get you much, and it comes at the cost of a lot of weight and reduced cargo capacity.
Yeah, like 4 inches less of height in terms of cargo capacity.
Yeah, so I would go for, between the two, I would go for standard 4Runner, I think, like we had, without the premium pack. Get it for like 48 or 50.
I might just get the SR5.
Sure, also a good option. Yeah, I think that's the way to do it.
All right, let's move on. We're going to revisit something that probably a lot of you have already had, but, you know, we had the original first edition Bronco when it first came out. And back then, I was a little hesitant because, once again, these vehicles have to kind of, you know, earn their keep. At the same time, we have to be able to sell them and then put the money into the next vehicle. So I was a little hesitant when we had that Bronco to actually do some serious off-roading with it. But we just bought the Everglades Bronco, and you did some serious off-roading with it, Tommy. You took it up a pretty hard trail. So let's talk about how the Bronco compares to the 4Runner in terms of its off-road ability and on-road ability, because I think out of the Bronco, Wrangler, and 4Runner, the 4Runner by far is the best on-road. I mean, there's no doubt in my mind.
Yeah. I mean, I think that initially so our Bronco has a little engine, the 2.3,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's the Everglades.
Yeah, and what I like about that engine, so the 4Runner is a 2.4. What Ford has done really well compared to Toyota is getting that engine to sound good. And I know that Ford is augmenting the sound on the inside. So they're playing faux engine noise through the speaker. But it sounds so much better and honestly more convincing than the Toyota setup. So the Toyota 2.4 just kind of sounds wheezy and gruff, where the 2.3 has got kind of a growl to it. And I know it's fake, but ultimately it doesn't matter because that growl covers up the inherent wheezy, gruff sound of any four-cylinder turbo. So I actually think Toyota needs to do what Ford does and augment some engine sound on the inside because it sounds actually really cool. 90% of people get in the thing and they think, oh, that engine sounds pretty good. Whereas 90% of people get into the 4Runner and hear it and say, oh, that engine sounds broken.
So to me, the biggest difference between the 4Runner and this Bronco is that the Bronco is wide. It is a wide vehicle.
Yeah, it's very big. It's kind of just big in every dimension, although it is lighter quite a bit, like 600 pounds lighter, Jen said, than the 4Runner because it doesn't have the hybrid system.
Or a metal roof, right?
Or a metal roof, yeah. I guess you have a plastic roof.
So why do we get the Everglades? And I think we're looking at it right there. The Everglades is this kind of unusual. You went and drove it up in the wilds of Michigan, and it's kind of this unusual model that Ford built but nobody bought except for us.
Yeah, they built it for I think only two model years, like 22 and 24.
And mainly because it only has a four cylinder, which I'm fine with. But what you do get is you get a winch, you get a snorkel, and you get the Sasquatch package.
Yeah, and you also get like it's really meant for water fording because it's got like raised trans and diff breathers.
That's good for us, isn't it, here in Colorado? We got a lot of water.
But it's my favorite trim because it's really stripped down on the inside. Vinyl everything, vinyl floors, vinyl seats, no power anything. It's got the basic sound system. It's got the winch right out of the factory ready to go. And it's got the lockers.
Kind of stuck on.
Yeah, the winch is not very well integrated in the front end, which we actually ran into in this video where we ended up running the winch right into a rock because it takes away the approach angle. So that's not a great design. But I really love the Bronco. I think it's a very well-rounded machine in what it can do. So it does
sacrifice... Oh, there you go. Yeah, we're watching it ram into the rock right there.
Yeah. It does sacrifice a little bit from on-road capability compared to the Toyota. And I think it's largely because the tires are just bigger. Right? You go from a 32 to a 34 in a bit, right? That's going to sacrifice. You got more unsprung weight. You got a higher center of gravity. It's just worse in every way. You got a taller sidewall for handling. But when you get it off-road, those tires really come into their own.
I mean, look, it's the only one of the three where you can get 35s from the factory without having to pay an arm and a leg, because you can get them on a Wrangler, right? Mm-hmm. But it's expensive. So out of the three that we tested, this was by far the cheapest. It was $55,000. The Trail Hunter was $69,000, right? And then the Wrangler, which we'll get to in a second, which was a 4xe, was $80,000.
Yeah.
But it didn't have the Extreme X package, so it didn't have the 35s.
Didn't have the 35s,
So talk to me about... you know, what's this like to off-road? Because you're doing some pretty serious rock crawling here with it. One thing we didn't get on the Everglades, which I'm kind of bummed about, is a disconnectable sway bar.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the Bronco, now that I've done actually quite a bit of off-roading with ours already when the first 1,000 miles, it's a little ham-fisted in how it approaches things. Mm,
that's a good way of putting it.
It just kind of lumbers over obstacles. It just kind of pounds its way through the trail. Having said that, it is immensely capable. This is like the Tiger tank of the off-road world.
Fair.
It just slams its way through everything, and it can take it, right? So it's very heavily armored. It's got very thick control arms. It's just very beefy underneath. But the result of that is, like, the traction control programming is not good, right? It relies heavily on lockers. So you know,
it does have front and rear.
Like the Forerunner has got that A-track system. It can kind of just tiptoe up trails. Mm-hmm. This thing, you always gotta be using lockers to get it up, even like.
You think that could be the tires? Because this comes with Goodyears, and I we've done a lot of off-roading, and I can't help but feel like, you know, a KO3 would give you better grip than these Goodyears.
Maybe a little, but even without the tires coming into play, you get it articulated and it just spins and then hops and bounces and then
That's not independent suspension, right?
No, it's not. It's just the traction control doesn't work like the Toyota does, or even like the Jeep does. It's just not elegant. And the trail control system is even more ham-fisted, right? Like that's the one-foot thing, or the no-foot thing, which is a version of crawl control where you take your feet off the pedals.
Yes.
And it's like on-off. On, off, spin, 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 more, more, more. Oh my God, off. So it's very not good.
The one thing I do like about the Bronco is it's got that goat mode, right? Goes over any terrain where you can just dial in off-road and it does everything for you.
Right, it clicks on a locker.
Yeah, so the Toyota... hold on. It does. So the Toyota has two sets of different things you have to select. There's the on-road, different...
This is on-road drive modes.
And then there's the off-road mode. So combined, it's very confusing.
It is confusing, yeah.
Yeah. Whereas this, you just put it in rock mode and it does everything.
Yeah.
You're like, okay, sure. I'm good to go.
I'll give you that. But so I think as a whole, I'm constantly impressed with what this vehicle can do, just because it's kind of like a Tonka toy off-road. It's got big tires, it's got a lot of clearance, and it'll get through it. You got to lock it up, you got to get on the turbo a little bit, but it will get through it. So I do love off-roading it. You air them down. They do so good. You mentioned the sway bar disconnect that ours does not have.
Yeah.
The front end has very little flex, right? And I didn't think it was going to be a big deal because it's independent from suspension, but like it doesn't have any movement in the front end. It's very, very limited.
So we wish we had that.
A little bit. Yeah. And then the biggest issue we found a lot off-road is that the rear control arm mounts hang very low. So if you look at the way Jeep does it, the control arm mount's actually above the skid plate, so you never really run into it. And this, it's really low below the skid plate, so you end up bashing those a lot. Now, once again, they're made out of lead, it looks like. They're massive, chonky things that I think are going to take the abuse, but you end up scraping those a lot. But as a whole, even though it's a little ham-fisted, it's a very enjoyable vehicle to off-road because it's just got so much of everything. It's so over the top that you're going to get through what you're aiming towards.
It's also got the least amount of like creature comforts.
Well, that's because it's the Everglades.
Yeah, right? But it does have like rubber mats, rubber floors actually, not mats, right? It just has
the whole floors are rubber. Yeah, so it's awesome.
So you can just hose it out. if you wanted to. But it certainly, you know, feels the least luxurious on the inside. Lots of cheap plastics.
Yeah, for
lots,
sure.
Lots of, but the seats are comfortable, even as much. So I shouldn't say cheap. I would say it's functional.
Well, if you want.
Not luxurious, it's functional.
If you want luxury, though, you can get an Outer Banks, right?
Yeah.
You can get ventilated seats in a Bronco, which is awesome. You can get the premium sound system.
I love the color, too, by the way.
Yeah, the sound system's really bad. But the Everglades is still my favorite because it's like the most bare bones, but with everything other than the sway bar disconnect. It's got the winch, which is just so cool from the factory. It's got those awesome wheels, which debuted on the Everglades.
Those are like Method wheels.
Yeah, now they're bringing them on to other cars.
Yeah.
So I love the Bronco a lot. I think that it's very, very good off-road. It's just a little, it's a chonk. You gotta work it.
And just like the Wrangler, it's very modular. So you can go, especially after how many years now, 4 or 5 at this point, right? 4 years it's been out?
Yeah.
There's a large aftermarket community and a large fan base. So
totally.
If you want to swap out the bumpers like you can on a Wrangler, no problem. Mm-hmm. There's just a lot of aftermarket support for it. So there's a lot of things you can do with it. The one thing that I noticed about ours was because of those 35s, it does raise the center of gravity a little bit higher than I get comfortable. I mean, you can get really kind of squirrely and sideways on that thing pretty quickly.
You sure can. Yeah.
So it's. I think off-road, you need a little bit more skill than you do in a Wrangler or in the 4Runner.
So this thing also does not have the camera system.
Yeah.
And I think Ford will tell you it's because it has the winch, right? Which is a dumb excuse.
You could put a camera in a winch.
And also, a lot of people disagree with me, but I've talked to the engineers on the program about this, so I do have a tendency to believe them, about why the Everglades doesn't have the V6. And a lot of the belief online is because the 4-cylinder has a high mount alternator, where the V6 has a low mount alternator, so it can go through more water. Well, I was like, that doesn't sound right. And I talked to the engineers, and they said the reason that the Everglades has a 4-cylinder is because when you consider the weight of the mount and the winch, along with that added heft of the V6, they would have to recertify it for crash. It'd be too much weight on the front end. Mm. So that's why they put the 4-cylinder in. And they said the 4-cylinder plus the winch and the plate weighs the same as the V6. And then I went and looked at the alternator on ours, thinking it'd be right up top.
Yeah.
It's way down low as well. So I think that the alternator thing is a misnomer.
It's a red herring.
It's a red herring,
look,
yeah.
Look, I would say, Tommy, that if you're a typical buyer like we were when we first got the first edition, you really want the 6-cylinder because you're like, I want the bigger. But to me, this 4-cylinder is just as capable. There was never a moment of me driving it or off-roading it that I ever felt like, gosh, I wish I had 2 more cylinders. I think it's got tons of power, and actually we drag raced it, and it did really well, even with those chunky tires. So no shame in the 4. In fact, I would say because of lightweighting and because, you know, off-roaders, just like sports cars, are better when you make them lighter. If it were me getting a Bronco, I would get the 4-cylinder over the 6 all the time. You're never gonna. I don't think you're gonna miss the 2 cylinders, unless of course you're gonna go with like 38s. At which point, good luck.
So I did have an interesting thing happen to me in that Bronco, and this is a test I want to do.
Yeah.
The transmission's a little busy. That 10-speed does a lot of shifting.
Hey Cole, you want to go to the drag race? It's on car. Thank you.
It's not published yet.
We haven't published the drag race?
No.
Oh, I was watching it yesterday, previewing
it. It goes up this weekend. This weekend.
Yeah, you can watch it, I think, this weekend. Sorry, my videos got confused.
So that 10-speed is very effective.
Yeah.
But in the mountains, it can be a little busy, right?
Too many gears?
A lot of gears.
Yeah.
And I thought of a new gauntlet we can run.
Yeah, help me. Tell me.
So I was running. It was pretty hot yesterday. It was about 80 degrees. And we were going up to the trail past Jamestown, Colorado. And from Jamestown to Peak to Peak Highway is a lot like going from here to Gold Hill.
Sure.
It's a kind of mostly paved, but then it turns to dirt.
Yep, I know that
really
road very well.
Really steep switchbacks.
Yes.
And the transmission on the Bronco got up to 223.
That's pretty hot.
Which is only a couple clicks below the red.
Yeah, I see that.
Which
there.
Is interesting. So and I don't know what the Jeep was at because I wasn't driving the Wrangler. But I think if you had 5,000 pounds behind that Bronco, you'd be getting that transmission into the red.
Well, if we had a towing package on it, we could put...
No, but I'm thinking it'd be interesting to kind of try that gauntlet with some of the trucks.
Yeah, I think you're right. That's a really good place to it might be even be harder than the one that we're doing. It's certainly higher.
Yeah, Jamestown to Peak to Peak.
Having said
test.
That, I would caution you, because if you say the Ford engineers, it's almost at the red line. They may tell you very much so that this is where they designed
it. I'm sure 223 is well within operating.
Exactly.
Yeah. But it does, like, you do get that kind of slightly alarming look where you just see that transmission get closer and closer and closer, and it's just two tiny clicks below the red line there.
All right, let's talk about the Wrangler. We also took the new 4xe Ruby off-road. That video is, I think, coming, so head on over to altfl.com. And by the way, guys, if you want a new podcast, check out Tommy's Car-ish, where him and Case and Mary and Jen talk about all things cars that isn't as car-related as this. So we're not doing deep dives there. You guys are just having fun. I think the last episode, you were figuring out what celebrities drive what cars.
Yeah, it was a pretty fun little video there.
Yeah, check that out. It's a really great. And I was looking at the numbers. That thing is growing like crazy, Tommy. Car-ish has the highest, right, Cole? Cole, it's in terms of views, Car-ish is our fastest growing podcast that we have.
Well, it went from zero views before we started it to now 3,000.
But still.
So people, it is growing slightly. But yeah, it's a fun podcast we do.
All right, so we could probably show a video of the Wrangler, maybe the one where we had our cheap Wrangler going up Kelly Flats, if you can find that
video. Or Red Cone, that's a really good one right there.
Red Cone's
go with that one. So Wrangler, Jeep Wrangler. The one we had was a 25 4xe Rubicon X, which means it has all of the fixins. It has the leather seats. It has the power seats. It's got all of the goodies on it.
And if you're watching, it wasn't this one. This is an older video, but it's very similar. It hasn't. The JL is a JL.
Yeah, well, it's got the bigger screen compared to the old one, and it's got some stuff going on. But look, we didn't have the 35s, and even still, if you're a Patreon member, okay, yes. This is my Patreon pitch. We have a video live right now, which isn't going to go up on off-road for a while because we've got some other stuff going on. But we did a video where Case and I took the Wrangler and the Bronco on a very hard trail. Not this Wrangler, the actual one we had, right? We took it on that T-33 plane crash trail. And it was really interesting. Like the Bronco was able to clear some of the bigger rocks more easily, scraped less, right? But on the articulated section, like I said, it kind of pounded its way up. Where the Wrangler is like a thoroughbred racehorse when you get it on really big rocks. Watching that front end with the sway bar disconnect flex over the rocks, seeing how the rear end kind of bites and moves with the surface of the
trail. Yeah, it's got the most articulation because of the solid axle, and you're guaranteed to have at least two wheels on the ground.
Yeah, I mean, it's so good at what it does when you get it into an environment it's designed to do. And yes, we were scraping a lot, because the tires were pretty small, but it's got so much skid plating underneath it that you just, and it's probably because I've done the Rubicon in it a couple times with you.
Yep. And you're going to go do it again.
Yeah, I just trust that this vehicle can do what it's designed to do. And I know that those skid plates can take endless bashing. So you scrape a lot, but it doesn't really matter because it gets through it.
I think they've done a really good job in updating the interior, making it more competitive currently. So I like the fact that the one that we had was much more comfortable. It had power seats, for instance. But you can't get past kind of the architecture of the vehicle, right? You're always sitting pretty close to the windscreen, which is straight up.
Yeah.
And it always feels just a little, one size too small for me, whereas the Bronco feels XL and the 4Runner feels just right. So it's like the Jeep feels a little too small, the Bronco feels a little too big, which is fine, and the 4Runner is just right. And I think that in their next generation in Jeep, I think Jeep knows this, but you know, they kind of sat on their hands for too long with the Wrangler. I feel like the latest update that they did to it, where we were there in Moab, where they, you know, kind of swapped around the front grille a little bit, gave it a bigger screen, moved the vents around, was just not enough for what they need to do to stay competitive or to stay the market leader in the off-road world.
I mean, you say that, right? You know, like it is a narrow car compared to the Ford, especially, but having it in the trees was so much nicer. Like I was watching Case kind of maneuver down this really tight trail. The plane crash trail is really tight. And there's some big rocks that I had to go over in the Bronco that Case was able to kind of skirt around because it's a narrower vehicle. You're right about the interior. The seats are still horrible. The seats are still – I don't know who they designed the seats for, what like percentage – what percentile height or width or whatever, but it's not me or anybody I know. So I don't know who – the seats are just – they're awful. They're park benches. You get like 2 hours of comfort in them and then you want out.
And as bad as the front seats are, the rear seats are worse.
Yeah, they're just not good. The seat – like it. There's no reason the seat has to be that flat and firm and uncomfortable. So that's really bad. The tech is excellent. The Uconnect system, the new Uconnect system, especially with wireless CarPlay and all that stuff, is the best in the business. really easy to use, and it has physical buttons for almost everything. Look at all those buttons. That's the same on the new one. AC, heated seats, heated steering wheel, volume, tune, fan speed, direction. It's all physical buttons.
My biggest complaint, and this is turning a positive into a negative, unfortunately, but I always loved they kept the fact that there's this giant lever where you're actually moving big pieces of metal around that are actually articulating and working like, you know, gears that give you low versus high, and yet it's so cumbersome, Tommy. Yeah, it's so true. Cumbersome to engage, you know, four low in that thing. And I don't know why. It should be like, it should just be like this very mechanical symphony, right? Where you just click, click, click. But instead, you're like fighting it and pulling on it, and you're afraid that you're breaking something. You're not, but that's what it feels like.
Yeah, well, I agree.
That's my biggest complaint about. And I was so happy when they kept that lever and they didn't go to like the, you know, the Ranger Raptor. Has those like lockers that are in the screen, which are so tactilely disappointing.
Yep.
Whereas this has real tactile, but man, just make it work.
To their credit, though, they did put the four auto system in a lot of Wranglers now. So
yeah, that's nice.
So
yeah.
Just like the Bronco, you have the ability to go four auto and then just leave it there, which is the way to do it. So I like that a lot about it.
Now let's talk about the other two things that it had that the others didn't have. First and foremost, it had the 4xe, which is the plug-in hybrid. How did you like off-roading, you know, in all-electric mode?
Well, Case was doing the off-roading for the most part in the Jeep, and he had a lot of problems with it, actually.
Oh, tell me.
Well, it's very quiet, which is cool. You got plenty of torque. You can use the electricity in low range. But the transition from going very slowly to stopped is incredibly abrupt. And it's because you don't have a traditional torque converter, right? You have this kind of pancake motor in the transmission. And Case was fighting like the auto hold the whole day, right? And I don't think he tried the different settings. He tried regen and the different kind of settings you can change with the four-wheel drive system and the driving modes. And it really wouldn't change it. But we were going really slow because it was a narrow trail. And when you're going like this speed, when you're going over 3 miles an hour, it was fine, right? But when you're going 2 to 0, the brakes were very grabby, he was saying. Like he had a really hard time modulating that really slow speed kind of crawling, which is crazy because it's a Wrangler. It's fine going up, but really it's the down the obstacles. And I have experienced what he's talking about in the past, and it's annoying. As a whole, you know, we talked about how the 4Runner doesn't sound as good as the Bronco. This doesn't sound good as any of them. Like,
yeah,
Wrangler,
the Pentastar has never been like it's a very reliable engine, but in terms of engine, no.
No, Wrangler Pentastar is fine.
Oh, this has a 2 liter, right? This has a little 2 liter turbo.
Yeah, and
you can't get the Pentastar with the.
Mary was making fun of it because it's just like it goes.
The Pentastar is not great either, though.
At least it doesn't sound like a gerbil stuck in a blender.
Remember when we took the Pentastar up? The eye gauntlet in the Gladiator.
It sounds like, mighty.
No, it sounds like it's about to blow up.
Yeah, this Pentastar sounds like it's about to blow up.
Because it's revving at 7,000.
This sounds like it's a teenager you're telling to do their homework. And I know part of it's because it's got the electric power steering, but a lot of vehicles have electric power steering and they don't go constantly.
All right, the other thing that people are wondering, why is it so expensive? The other thing that made it so expensive is that MySky one-touch roof.
Well, yeah. And
that's a very expensive option.
VX is everything. It's got the color-matched fenders and the color-matched roof and the one-touch power roof. I actually like that one-touch power roof.
I do, too. I really like it. It's really so much easier than having to,
pull the panels.
And then now, do you know that we just did a video with our friends over at Best Top, and they do a one-touch convertible. Where it completely, like a traditional.
Yeah, the whole thing folds back.
The whole thing folds back. And they do it for both the Bronco and the Wrangler. So if you guys want like the next level of convertibleness, then that's the one. So in the few final minutes that we have, let me ask you a question. Now that you've taken all three of them off-road, and I'm going to throw you a little curveball. Mm-hmm. Which would you, as an off-roader, not on-roader, which would you pick?
Well, it depends on the kind of off-roading you're doing. If you're doing...
For what you did.
For doing hard rock crawling...
Yeah.
Even with the smaller tires, I think the Wrangler is still the best.
Okay. How about for just general ownership? If it were your money, which of the, and keeping in mind that these three are priced very differently, but let's say they were, you know, evenly priced, which would you buy?
The Bronco.
Okay.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think that the Bronco is still incredible off-road, and it will still do 99.99999% of trails that the Jeep will do. And it's just I like the powertrain more. I like that 2.3 a lot more than the hybrid or the V6 actually. I like the interior space a lot more. I like the clearance and the look quite a bit. I think it's got a really cool look. I love that you can pull the top off and the doors off without having to do the mirrors. I think there's like a lot of really smart things for it.
Let me throw you that curveball.
Yeah.
We just sold it. How about the Defender 90? If I throw that in there, are you gonna go with a Land Rover over these three, or would you still go with the Bronco?
I might go for the Defender.
Interesting. How about if you had to off-road it?
The Bronco.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. So I'll tell you my take because I did take all three. I think the one that surprised me the most in terms of just how much better, most improved, is the 4Runner. I just think it's gotten much more off-road capable. For everything from the off-road traction control system
to its awesome.
To its, you know, cladding, to the onboard compressor. I just think it's the most improved. I think Toyota's come a long way in actually competing seriously off-road, where you don't have to go to your local shop and do all this stuff. And the old man Emu was great. On-road, I would take the 4Runner all the time.
100%.
The old faithful, the one that, you know, is probably the most athletic of them all, is by far the Wrangler. I still think, like you said, that when you're off-roading it, it's the narrowest. It's the most, you know, Tiger Wood, whatever analogy. I'm old now, so I'm using old analogies. But, you know, the one that can do it all. But the one that can do it all off-road, but the one that is kind of a compromise between that, is probably the Bronco, where it's good off-road, but it's also very good on-road. You don't pay necessarily the price that you would pay on-road. You're not like driving a brick into the wind, which is kind of what a Wrangler is, which is fine. Look, I've actually been driving the Wrangler recently, and I've been driving it in all electric mode, and I'm really surprised at its performance and how good it is on-road for how good it is off-road. But I still think just in terms of suspension and in terms of creature comfort, because of its layout, the Bronco is a little bit more my speed if you're looking at an all-rounder. So I think they're all really great competitors in the space. I'm so happy that we can do this, that we have these, that we can compare them.
And the one that I might do over all of them?
Land Cruiser.
No. they're even more expensive than all the ones we listed, but I still like that Grenadier a lot.
Oh, God. The Grenadier.
Yeah. That's a very cool vehicle. Yeah, and
if we had, you
don't like the beeping thing that they fixed.
No, forget the beeping. Like the seats also, the Recaros. Come on, Recaro, what the hell happened?
They're not great, but they're now new. They're different, apparently.
Thank God.
Because Recaro went out of business.
The old ones were, and it needs bigger wheels and tires.
Sure, which is addressed. But that's a very unique vehicle that kind of blends kind of all three. Yeah, it is a lot of money. I don't think it's worth $80,000.
Well, if we're going there, I'm going with the LX.
Okay,
700.
This has gone way off the rails.
If you're going to go for the Grenadier, I'm going to go for the real Land Cruiser. Well, I say real Land Cruiser, but the Land Cruiser traditional.
Sure.
The one that, you know, is the Land Cruiser.
The 300 series.
The Prado. Yeah, I'm going to go with that. How about there?
Well, there you go.
Or if you're going to go there, then you go Range Rover. You can go even higher.
No.
And then,
Range
of course.
Rover is not its own. That's its own thing. That's a city slicker.
And then, of course, Tommy, if you're going to go there, I'm going to have to go with the G-Wagon.
Yeah, well.
We got off the rails
a little, but of the three, I still think my favorite currently that kind of blends the 4Runner and the Wrangler is the Bronco.
You know what's surprising about the G-Wagon? I was listening to Spike's Car Radio, and they had Johnny Lieberman on.
Uh-huh.
He said that the 63, right, the V8, outsells the new six-cylinder, which I just had, in the G-Wagon, like 10 to 1.
Yes.
Really?
Yeah. People really, if you're going to spend 170, most people can spend 200.
And apparently the electric one's a flop.
It's not selling at all.
People are saying it's not selling.
Yeah. But that one, I actually like that. I really want to try an electric one on off-road tires.
I blame it for the way they unveiled it. Didn't they have some
rapper
who danced on top of it?
Yes. I think the electric G-Wagon in 15 years with a set of KO3s is going to be such a cool vehicle.
I think the electric one is getting down to that price where we can start, you know, thinking 2 or 3 years we could buy one for a test vehicle.
I think you're a little optimistic. They're going to be 80 grand in 2 or 3 years.
Apparently they sell like 10,000 G-Wagons and only about 1,000 a year units, and only about 1,000 of those are the electric one.
Well, I would like to get one at some point.
Yeah, send us Mercedes. Are you listening? We'll solely boost sales by reviewing it.
Yeah,
right?
And I might break it, but send it our way anyways. Apparently. All right, guys. Well, I think we're going to cut it a little early today because we have to go get to the airport to go drive something not off-roady. We're off to a Bentley program.
Well, maybe the Bentayga.
Maybe.
Maybe that can go off-road.
So we're going to go head to that now. But we'll have another long episode for you next week over at the TFL Talk YouTube channel or wherever you get your podcasts.
And if you want, Andre's in Korea this week, so I kind of subbed for him at Talking Trucks. Mm-hmm. So we kind of went over all of the all of the long-term vehicles, trucks that we had at the office and kind of went through the bad, good, and ugly about them. So head on over to Talking Trucks, and we'll see you next time.
Ciao. Awesome. Thanks, guys. Bye.
Bye.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.